Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, as always...
Ben Vanel here, reporting in from jolly old the United Kingdom. joining us, as always, it's a man who loves to report.
Miserable old Australia over here. Hooray, my name's Adam Knox. You're it in Glasgow. Is.
Yeah, I'm in Glasgow and it's fucking beautiful here. It's been like 25 and sunny every single day that I've been in this great kingdom.
That's great. Okay. I've just noticed that in my house I have basically the same depressing lighting that you have in your hotel room.
Yeah,
the famously unhomely feeling ambiance of a Glaswegian hotel. That's what I live in every day, I'm noticing, because of our Zoom call here, our Discord call.
I've got a Sainsbury's bag in the background. You don't even have that.
No, I've got a CRT television ready to pretend to be the 90s in, huh?
You're currently incarcerated, we should say, Adam, and it's they let you do this once a week. That's very normally you get out on day release to come and do the pod live, but today they've just let you have the computer.
Yeah.
So
CRT television I mentioned is clear so that they know I don't have drugs smuggled inside of it. You know, that's what they do with technology in prison, is it's all clear plastic. They have to make like custom versions of TVs and whatever with this translucent frame so that they can see through, make sure there's not knives or other contraband in there. And I fucking really want to get, I've already completed a fucking infinity machine, and since my brain doesn't have anything to obsess over now, what if I had an all clear infinity machine with the prison PlayStations machine.
Exactly. Fuck. Is that where those like colored clear back Macs come from?
Yeah.
Are they
those
N64s
as well? That was all prisoners getting to have a grape N64. They were the all so excited for Donkey Kong. Yep.
Damn, I didn't know that. That's a fun fact. That's a fun fact about prison.
It's one of the many.
That's how I'm going to stop myself from getting shivved on day one. I'm just going to come in with bits of trivia. Hey guys, did you know the reason everything's clear in here is so that we can't hide drugs in it?
That's what they say you're meant to do on your first day of prison, is walk up to the most knowledgeable looking guy there and give him a fact he's never heard before, so everyone knows you've got him.
I'm actually him.
Yeah. All the guards be like, stop, it's rude. The tone is rude, even if it's interesting information.
I'm pushing up my clear glasses.
Well, Tommy, actually, all glasses are clear. That's the point of them.
Well, no, there's Ben, no sunglasses allowed.
Not in prison. There's no sun.
You're overseas, Ben. You've jumped on to record this because we're in the week of a huge game coming out. You're
That's
away
right.
from your home. Your home console and your home computer, but thankfully there's a little thing called the xCloud, which means that you can play games wherever you are without any kind of restrictions.
That's
especially,
right. Yep.
Especially a game that's launching day one on Game Pass.
Oh.
Me and Adam have been playing it for a week, so you presumably will have been able to do the same thing.
Absolutely, and you know the great thing about being in the UK is they have a first world standard internet infrastructure. You know, yep. Like the internet here, like this is, it's actually an Airbnb, not a hotel room, but it is still very bare and very, it's got hideous downlights only. But the internet is whip fast. And so obviously in this most momentous of weeks, I'm so keen for this game. I was ready to play it. I pre-installed it, all of that stuff. It's the game about stars. Sea of Stars.
Oh, I didn't even realize okay. how weird that is. That,
it's a that bit weird.
Those two games have come out next to each other. I've genuinely, because I've been trying to play as much Starfield as possible. And
what?
And that was the one we're talking about. But, damn. Okay, two games with stars in it. The first time it's ever happened.
But also, yes, Tommy, as you were ironically alluding to, I bought the early access thing for Starfield. It's like $50 or something, or maybe a bit less, I can't remember, to get access to it on the 1st of September. Would have been perfect, but it's not on xCloud in early access. I don't know why. I googled it like after I went on xCloud and typed in Starfield, and it said sorry, no results found. And people on Reddit were like, obviously it's not on xCloud in early access. Why would you think that? That's so stupid. So that was really insulting. But it's like, just not.
Well, because I paid. Like like I was worried that the same thing would happen with Game Pass, but it was through Game Pass. It was like I think that premium edition that you got it early was like $110 or something. But if you have a Game Pass subscription, it was like $50 or
and
something
you get
to just upgrade to the
as well. It's not just for the early access. Like the main thing, I guess, is you get whatever expansion they have planned down the line.
And
so
an
I
art
haven't
book
wasted my money
and the
entirely
soundtrack. You can just sit back in that beautiful Glasgow Airbnb and just leap through a PDF of little drawings of rocks.
I mean, look, rocks aside, the art that I've seen in YouTube videos of Starfield, you know, the design and stuff, it's fucking sick. And I know we watched that, you know, that big thing of it. Then they talked about NASA punk and, you know, all of the sort of, you know, stylistic stuff that's gone into it. But I am going to leaf through that PDF. I'm sorry. It's not a joke.
While I've been playing Starfield, I have been saying the word NASA punk under my breath sometimes because it is such a funny word. It is just about the nerdiest possible combination of sounds that I can imagine outside of like, NASA punk. But do you want to talk about that first? Because you haven't had, unfortunately, I kind of just assumed it would be an xCloud too, but I never really check in on xCloud, and I guess it's relatively common for games not to be on there.
Right.
But is it will it be on there once it's launched on Game Pass? I don't know.
It will.
I kind of, even that thing of just paying that, like saying like, oh, it's, this is our big thing. This is our big Game Pass thing. And it's, you know, it's launching day one on Game Pass, but it's kind of not because you had to like pay an extra thing to get it a week early, but getting around that by saying, oh, it's in early access. No, it's not.
No.
It's just, I don't know. It's all a little bit, it just seems a little kind of, I don't know, weird and a bit grubby to not just go like, this is your big thing. You know, this is your big selling product for this service that you have.
To be fair, it's like, it's stupid because it's the same words, but they aren't saying it's in early access. They're saying you have early access to
the full thing.
Yeah, it's like
a dumb distinction, but just to be clear.
Yeah, because you've done that with some games before, Nox. I know, like, wasn't there like Call of Duty or like there have been games where you can do that.
More and more now too. Mortal Kombat 1 is doing it in a couple of weeks, and it seems to be the thing that they've been trying for years to get people to buy, like, oh, it's your online license for this game. You've got to buy it new and all these little tricks to get an extra $10 out of you. This one really seems to be working, giving it to people a few days earlier. Yeah, it is weird because it's their big flagship spaceship, and to not have a feature of the thing they're trying to sell there for the people who are going in with this early access thing, who would be, you know, the top brass, the people they really want to wank hard. So, disappointing.
I love that movie, Wank Hard, the porn parody of Walk Hard.
Yeah, Weird Al does the theme. But it's out now for everyone. We've been playing it. Should we just jump into the sea of the field?
Yes, the sea of field.
Sea of the field.
It's the game on everyone's lips. Why not? Let's talk about it. I you know, like I said, yeah, I have watched some YouTube videos of it and some other like reviews and stuff. Read that IGN 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been, man, because it's such a big game, all of the like fucking online chat about it has been a minefield.
A cesspit?
I was trying to think of a word that didn't have field in it. And my brain just kept going like, nah, just say minefield. I'm not going to look for another one.
It's been a starfield.
But ignoring all, do you want to do it this way? Because me and Tommy have been playing it. I've at this point finished the main campaign thing. I played it for like 30 something hours. It flips over. It does a thing where instead of telling you an hour count at some point, it goes, you've played this for 1 day and 14 hours. So I guess that's closer to 40 hours, which makes it feel way worse.
Yeah, I hope that doesn't become the new precedent. Good Lord.
I think Bethesda have done that for a while, and that'll be a running theme in talking about this game, is that Bethesda have not changed an inch since, like, especially Fallout 4. This game feels so similar to Fallout 4, but I'm really enjoying it. Do you have, I was going to suggest, any questions about it as the one who hasn't gotten to play it that you want answered? Any burning questions?
Any questions from Ben?
And what a reference that everyone will get, Tommy.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Josh Lawson?
Yeah.
Flowers for
Peter
Algernon?
Hellier?
Yeah.
A little known Australian film. I guess the main thing is I've heard that it's very similar to previous Bethesda games. So what, in your opinion, does it do differently and better than a Fallout 4? What makes this special?
I can tell you differently in two categories, better and worse. Because weirdly with this game, the initial impressions, at least for me, I don't know how you feel, Tommy. Perhaps you could tell me soon. The initial impressions, I don't think this game gives a good first foot forward. I think it takes a little bit of time to sink in and really start to figure out how it's working. Because initially the menus were really poorly done and confusing, and I was getting stuck in them and stuff, and like,
right,
and that makes me sound like an idiot, but it was happening. And
then
this
guy couldn't escape out of the menu.
There's like a rhythm to it that is different from the previous games, because you're not looking at something in the distance and going, I wonder what that tower's about. Oh, it's a high building, now I understand what a tower is. And walking over to it, it's much more segmented than that this time. Because everything's on a different planet and whatever.
Yeah, right. And I'm not, as I settle into it, I'm not minding that so much, but it's definitely, I mean, that's kind of the big thing that IGN were about in their 7 out of 10 review. And within a couple of hours of playing it, I feel like I have to, I was like, I completely agree with that. It does feel very weird to have this game where it's, like, I've kind of really had to work to detach myself from how much they were hyping this. Not just Bethesda, but also, like, people from Microsoft. There was that quote from someone in there, like, a while ago saying that this is the most... What was it? It was something like, this is, like, the most important RPG that's ever been made.
I'm sure there's something like that.
It's not. It's a good game. It's not... It feels weirdly... It does not feel very next-gen at all, which is not... Which is not a knock to it, but it doesn't, for how much it's been hyped up, and it really seemed like it could be, oh, this is something that'll feel like the first truly, truly, you know, futuristic next-gen feeling game. It actually kind of feels, it's so segmented. It's so kind of level-based, because there's no feeling of you're getting into your craft and then going up into space and flying around and exploring a planet. That's all done through menus, and it's all done through fast travel, which seems very weirdly counterintuitive to the way they've been talking about this as a game of exploration and a game of like having such scope. To me, it doesn't feel like it's got scope. It just feels like there's lots of different areas that are available to you in a menu.
Especially just towards the beginning, that feeling is stronger than later on. When, like, the further in I got, the more I, like, met the game on its terms or whatever. And I've been really enjoying it. But I agree that it, like, this game could be at least 10 years old. And I would absolutely buy that. Because, like, it hasn't progressed, and in that way of like exploration just feeling a bit worse, especially initially, or not even but just kind of being gone in the way that it was in the previous Bethesda games, is a strange feeling that you need to adjust to. And then there is heaps of stuff in it, and it's massive, and there's lots out there to go and do and to see, and I've come across some really cool side quests and everything, but most of those have been given to me by going to a major city, walking around. One of the guards is like, "Do you know, I heard there's a bunch of hubbub going on this planet over there." And then a little thing pops up and it's like, "Fly to that planet." And then you kind of, you can walk to your ship and take off, and it'll go, like, here you can either fast travel to a place through your menu, which can be clunky at first and you have to adjust to, or it'll go walk to ship, loading screen to get in, climb into pilot seat, loading screen to fly into space, angle yourself in space just near the planet at the blue dot, showing you wherever the other planet is. Press A, loading screen to that system. Press X on the planet, loading screen to land. Hold X to get out of your ship, loading screen to be on the planet. That's the most like immersive way you can kind of do it, you know? So it's not doing
weird. No, it's really weird. And I get, like, when you're saying the thing of like a Fallout where you you look in the distance and you go to visit that thing, obviously when it's all planets, you kind of are going to lose that, just you know, naturally, when the stuff to explore and go find is on a different planet. And again, I don't know what the workaround is, because it's not like I necessarily want to spend hours just flying through blackness to get to another planet. But it just, it feels, it's also just kind of like the way the menus look to me is a bit of a shame and a bit of a missed opportunity. Like, it's very video gamey. It doesn't really have that feel of like, even if it was a bit more like you were looking at the nav system of the ship or something, it just feels very, very menu-y. It's so immersion-breaking when to get to that menu, Ben, to navigate yourself. The first menu you see is like it's a thing of your avatar standing there, and it's like, here's your, it's like, it's just weirdly takes you right out of it. It's no, there's no like in-world like, oh, well, to fast travel, I go to the, you know, the map screen on the ship and I look at that, and then it comes up and it's all sort of contextual. It's very like hit start and select the name of the place.
I agree. And like, especially compared to like Fallout, where it'll, you know, zoom in to your Pip-Boy and everything, and that's done a lot more kind of in-world. You've got like a techno watch that you get given really quick in this, but the menu is all sort of... not to the same level of aesthetic which the regular game has, which is really great. And I love the retro future stuff they're doing, that's like a little bit kind of alien or something like that, a bit maybe more advanced than that. Kind of like NASA punk is maybe what I'd call it.
That's a really cool way of describing it.
Yeah, dude.
I think that's going to catch on in a big way.
I've been a virgin for 400 years.
I think that's probably why the menu stuff sticks out to me, because I've never been particularly drawn in by the style of Bethesda stuff. But I am in this. Like, I'm enjoying this. I thought I would bounce off this very quickly. I'm enjoying this way more than I expected to. The story is really interesting. The aesthetic and the environments and the characters, I'm really, really enjoying. And you're right, like, it's got such a strong aesthetic that it's an aesthetic that is so like made for menus. It's so it's a
odd.
Weird. Yeah, it's not like playing a Tears of the Kingdom where it's like, well, I mean, this doesn't lend itself to having a visually, you know what I mean? Like,
but then
how would
of,
this world translate into a block of text or whatever?
And it does, but, though. Tears of the Kingdom has your little slate thing for
yeah,
that's true. Yeah, no, that's very true.
But like,
yeah.
and it seems like, because I will say, there are a lot of flaws with this game, and we could go through and list them, because they're very much there and they're like worth talking about. Like, the space travel stuff is disappointing from how they were kind of talking about it, but also serves its function in like to get you to places. And but the overall thing with this game that is greater than the sum of its parts is that I'm having a really good time and I really want to keep playing it. And there's something about like, even though in a lot of ways this game is like behind others, like technically it doesn't look or even really run great, there are still a lot of bugs. It got like a good rap before it came out for like it doesn't have bugs. Yes, it does. There's heaps. I've been saving little videos, and I've got like 50 videos of just like nothing crazy. There's a couple of crashes and a couple of that thing that have happened to me, but the main thing is that it is actually, for me, more enjoyable than that big long list of flaws that are like confusing would indicate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think with the exploration stuff, like once I kind of it's not even like I necessarily was looking forward to that part of it. It just more feels like a weirdly missed opportunity when you're making this part of this type of a game. But once I kind of accepted it for that, and it is just more like something like a Deathloop where it's like I'm just going into the menu and I'm selecting this area and then I'm going there and I'm doing the level. I'm not like I'm not like walking around, you know, I'm not plotting a course from A to B and getting lost along the way and discovering all this stuff. It's like, it is very like I'm selecting this area from a menu and I'm going there and I'm in that area and then I've done it and then I'm going back to the menu and going to a different area.
Cause
which I don't mind, which I'm now that that's washed over me, like you're saying, meeting it on its terms, I'm having a good time with it.
There's some really cool shit in there that I've been really enjoying that like, once you kind of go back to, Bethesda still make games exactly the same as how they always have. And then this one is sort of missing one element. It's great.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm surprised that both of you are enjoying it so much, especially you, Nox, because I thought that this would be the Ben game, you know? Like, I love Fallout 3 and Fallout 4. I think a lot of people are like, yeah, Fallout 3 was good. But Fallout 4 was a bit of a drop-off, even amongst Bethesda fans. I love Fallout 4. Like, I've played hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of it. It's one of my most played games. Mm. And yet it is a game that people, find huge flaws in. And so the fact that this is could well be a modded Fallout 4, you know, like the so many of the basic functions, the gameplay, the game philosophy almost, you know, is like really, really similar still. And that game came out like, I don't know how long ago,
eight years ago or something. It was one of the first games we were talking about when we started doing this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember, we talked about the bus ads and shit. It was like still an early time for games becoming, you know, hugely mainstream. I'm surprised. I'm surprised that it sounds so similar in so many of the ways that people cannot like Bethesda games, that it's for you guys especially, you know, because it hasn't been roundly positive stuff. It sounds like I'm just gonna really like it a lot.
It's a bit like the aesthetic and the sort of style of it is, for me, it's a little bit kind of less in the direction that they normally go. That's not really been my cup of tea. It's maybe feels like it's 10 to 20% less of their, I don't know what you'd call it, attitude. Like, it is just a bit more straight down the line. Like, we're in space. You know, they haven't gone too wild with any sort of like, twist on that or anything. Well, I don't feel like
what's working for me with this game, because you're right, like the Bethesda thing, every time a game of theirs have come out, is with Fallout 3 people are like, it's Oblivion with guns, then Skyrim was Fallout with swords, then Fallout 4 was Skyrim with guns, and now this is Fallout 4 in space. Like, it's the same,
right?
But they have gotten better at combat stuff. That is improved in to the point where it's like kind of halfway between how Fallout 4 felt to me and how like Destiny feels to me, which I think has some of the best like shooting gameplay that there is. And this is,
I mean, one of the criticisms of Fallout 3 and 4 was that the combat was a menu screen. Like right. the only way that you could really engage with it, like in an accurate, you know, way, was that the game would pause and you would choose where to shoot. So that's, yeah, that is a cool progression, it sounds like.
Yeah, the AI is still really bad for the enemies, and you're fighting a lot of very similar enemies often. Like, again, just everything that I can say about this game comes with another side to it. And there's just, mm-hmm. especially just on paper, there's a lot wrong with this game. But then the effect of it, they've just gotten, I mean, they've made this game so many times in a way that the momentum and the just like real kind of PS3 era classic feeling type of video gamey shit that they're doing with this that feels like an Assassin's Creed or whatever, that like can be boring of just check this box, here's another thing, go check this, go do this, here's another place to go, here's this. They've got that momentum down to such a point where it really well, it's doing a really good job of getting you into that flow and just feeding you more and more cheeseburger that like I don't think it's especially good for you, and like there's more gourmet meals out there or whatever, but the way they do this, no one is using these same ingredients in the same way, and there's better cheese out there, there's better bread, but they're not put together the same as this.
Yeah, it's definitely that first like main big city that you go to. It's got
New for Atlantis.
Me, New Atlantis. It had this rare effect for me that not many games can do, where like just walking around it, I was like, I feel like I can feel the climate of this area. Like it just, I felt like I felt my body temperature change. I was like, oh, it's, I don't know, there's something about like environmental design.
I'd love
that
to
when it's done.
That moment in your house of like someone's just opening a window next to you and you're like, this game is incredible.
But it has that feeling. It's like it's that rare thing that environmental design, when it's done really well, you're like, I know what this space feels like to stand in. I bet it feels like this part of the world roughly that I've been in. Like, it was, that was kind of like an early moment of it where I was like, oh yeah, this like, yeah, for a lot of the technical faults of it in terms of the design of this area, there's like, there's something else going on here that's like a cut above. But like, yeah, the weird like technical stuff of having a companion who is accompanying you on missions, and I just haven't gone and spoken to her about this yet because I just don't want to trigger the mission. But she keeps saying, hey, when you've got a moment, I'd like to have a talk to you. And it's like midway through, like a like a character in the quest, like talking to us about something, or we're like in the middle of combat. It's like, it's happening like every 3 minutes. And I'm like, we're in the middle of a mission. Like, I'm going to, I'll talk to you and I'll do your little side quest thing when I feel like it. But
I will say, you
this
can
is
pretty
so
safely,
taking me out of it.
You can safely talk to her without having to like go anywhere or whatever.
Right. But it is just funny the amount that it is really wanting me to like, yeah, it is to the point where just that classic thing where you've got, you know, like multiple NPCs like talking over the top of each other, like all these different like dialogue things being triggered at the same time. It's like, oh yeah, that's still a thing in games, I guess, no matter how much they're touted as being the next big leap forward, that's still going to be in
there. I mean, in this one especially, I've had it's so clunky in the Bethesda ways of like the companions especially, like going missing, just like floating in the air, all sorts of that same thing of like an important sort of section, the dialogue was a recording that I'd started playing before it from a story thing that you pick up, and someone talking to me and someone talking in the background that were all related to the story that I was meant to be listening to. There are so many things like that, but yeah, I don't know, for whatever. And the other thing with the exploration stuff is like, it isn't just actually physically a sort of small area in the way of like, I don't know, Outer Worlds was or whatever, where it's just like a very small constructed area. You can walk off and there's other stuff in the distance. Everything I've seen of that so far, none of it's really that interesting. It's a kind of flat landscape. you'll get these sort of markers that you can scan in the distance. It'll be like, here's a cave or an outpost or whatever. And it's not seemingly like procedurally generated. I think it's a bunch of prefabricated stuff that they put there that repeats mm-hmm. often. Because I've come across the exact same innards of different outposts and whatever multiple times, even by focusing pretty much on the main story. So that stuff
gets repetitive. It's hard because it's like space stuff. But yeah, I did a side quest where I think I was on, basically like Mars. And I'm in this kind of outposty thing. And then I had to go to a mine and just walk across just this flat, rocky drab for ages to get so to this long. Mine. And like, I get, you know, what are you meant to do? It's like, that's the environment. That's the planet we're on. And they're striving for a degree of realism with this stuff. So I don't know what the alternative is, but I was just like, and then I got, I died almost immediately after getting to the mine, and it reset me. Like, I had to do the walk all over again. And it was just like, oh, this is just I was just like jumping and boosting through the air to just like get myself across there as quick as possible. I was like, this is such a drag. This isn't me going off the grid. This is like a quest line that I'm following.
The thing that's strange to me about like, because they've said that it's for realism and like, you know, but no, it isn't, because the cities are actually small. Like, it's the same as Skyrim. It's a trick where, like, this is the main city of Skyrim. There's 11 people living here. The difference now is that there's slightly more, and then there's, like, some random NPCs walking around carrying their briefcases, being like the fucking Truman Show. If you go up and interact with them, they're like, here there's people in neon who take drugs. All right, bye. And like, just find they're so scared to talk to you or staring at you as you walk past. Cause like, that's something as well. Immediately when you get into this game, you're the most important fucking person in the universe. Everyone wants your help. Everyone thinks you're amazing. And it's doing all of that. So, and that's all fine because games are tricks and you have shortcuts for things. So it is kind of boring.
And you're the protagonist. You can't just be a nameless person rising through the ranks. Like
But going from A to B, I'd love a little jet bike or something.
It's going to make you walk across like flat, bland landscape. I was like, why isn't there a little buggy that I can take out?
Because they couldn't fit it into their old engine is I think the reason why.
Right.
They're building it with broken tools, unfortunately.
So many of the things that it doesn't have are the things that No Man's Sky only had at launch, you know, like the fluidity of launching, you know, getting into a spaceship, flying into space, landing on another planet. Like the menus in that, even initially, like, you know, before they sort of updated it, was like, you'd go to a map to go from one planet to the next, but that was it, you know, like everything else was, it was
that's
in the game.
That's the thing I was thinking about, like, why isn't that? Like early on I was like, why isn't this flying stuff in here? It seems so weird. Is this a symptom of it having to be on the Series S and the X at the same time and they just technically couldn't get it in? But then I was like, No Man's Sky was doing that pretty easily like six or seven years ago. And like,
it's this engine, and like there are positives to it where like, you know, it tracks every item that there is and you'll go back to the planet and it's still there and whatever, but like, I don't care about that. Pretend it got washed away in a sandstorm or whatever. Like, it's boring to walk around these flat, pretty lifeless kind of planets, even if they've got some alien fauna there. Like, it always feels, and the game throughout its whole thing always feels like you are in this like quite old fashioned video game. But then like, a lot of the missions are some of the most interesting stuff they've done. The ideas that they've had. I don't want to like spoil any of them, but I do want to give one as just like a fun example that's fairly early on to give you an idea of some of the tone and stuff. Where like one of them is you basically go through Space Batman's Batcave to get to like the Batcave there. And get his bat suit and bat ship. And it's not the Batman, but it's called the Mantis. And then when you put on the Mantis costume and fly that ship, if you come across the space pirates, they're like, oh, fuck, it's the Mantis. And there's like really characterful stuff like that that is peppered through it that really keeps you going with this thing.
Yeah, everything I've done so far, a few of the main things and then a couple of little deviations have all been, you know, now go here, now go here, now go here. But, yeah, the little threads of them are really interesting. Mm. There's been a bunch of them where it's been like, well, now do you want to tap out of this at this point or do you want to keep going? You know, you can go do other stuff now, but there's probably a bit more to find out about this little job that we've given you. And that thing of like that all does feel pretty like those bits feel pretty immersive of just like you are kind of walking around doing your thing. You've signed up to take on these extra jobs. You know, yeah, you can follow the lead or not follow the lead. The like the writing and the people that you're meeting along the way is way more appealing and interesting to me than, like I said, than I expected it to be given kind of how I felt about the very little of Bethesda stuff I've engaged with in the past. It's very like, yeah, I'm in a little, yeah, it does just feel like I'm in a little episode of a show. It's like, yeah, yeah. I want to find out what's going on. Who is this guy that's hidden away? What's the story?
So much of it too. And like, it is pretty consistently like some of the best stuff that they've done. As well as like technically, for as much as, you know, like there are flaws with it, it's the best they've done so far with that stuff, I think, which for more than a decade they have been struggling with that aspect of things. But like the facial animations and the way people talk and look at you 90% of the time is a lot less sort of wooden than I feel it used to be. It is still more wooden than a lot of other games now. But you know what I mean. They are upgrading on their pocket of games.
Young Australians have never been more lonely. Yet loneliness is rarely discussed and often misunderstood. Season 2 of the We Are Lonely podcast is a part of Medibank's 10-year commitment to reduce chronic loneliness in Australia.
Follow the journey of four diverse 20-somethings on their search for connection.
It's shocking enough to know that half of us will feel lonely this week, but it may surprise you more to learn that young adults are some of the loneliest people in Australia.
If we learn to understand and manage feelings of loneliness, it can be a normal part of the spectrum of human emotions.
Just as we all get hungry or thirsty, we all get lonely. It's a normal part of being human.
But if it becomes chronic, it can have the same impact on us as smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Over this six-part reality podcast series, four young people meet with mentors and experts who will help them build strategies to reconnect.
Through their stories, we understand the reality of loneliness in Australia, experienced by a generation that theoretically has never been more connected.
Follow four vastly different young adults as We Are Lonely unpacks the complexity of emotions that come with this formative period in our lives.
We Are Lonely is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Search for We Are Lonely and listen today.
This episode of Filthy Casuals is brought to you by our friends and yours over at Manscaped.
They have brought you yet another episode by bringing you yet another beard hedger.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, their first one. That's one of their big product launches of late is they've got a beard hedger.
You might be launching yourself into space in Starfield. But they've launched products onto Earth.
Yep, exactly.
You don't have to be an alien to shave your face and balls.
Yeah, it won't
take... If anything, it's... Okay, Men in Black 2 contained a Balchinian.
I was about to go there.
He only would have needed to have bought one product from Manscaped.
Very lucky. One of the very few benefits of being an alien.
But they've got a whole bunch of good stuff. The beard hedger is one of them. It's for your facial hair.
Sure is.
Or the lawnmower 4.0 is still the king of the crotch. And there's a whole bunch else besides.
That's
the...
my nickname in university.
Oh,
okay.
Baby.
Goddamn. You should go have a look for yourself, I reckon. Go to Manscaped's website, and while you're there, if you happen to make a purchase, you can use the code FILTHY at checkout and you get 20% off and free shipping.
Ooh, lordy. Ben, you're over in the UK at the moment.
I am.
Imagine you've got the beard trimmer in the little carry-on, in the little travel toiletries bag.
That's right, yeah.
Probably getting a lot of comments in the street. God, blimey, that's a smooth-looking face.
Look at his shiny nuts. Shine your balls for you.
Don't need it, man.
I've got my patented Manscaped ball balm and all of that stuff keeping me smelling nice and beautifully manicured.
20% off and free shipping with the code FILTHY. Go to Manscaped.
Yeah.
While you're on the internet, make sure that you are taking precautions and using tools to travel the mm-hmm. globe safely.
Mm.
NordVPN is the one that we recommend for a VPN.
Yeah, I'm taking one of those physical VPNs.
Oh, sure.
Those old-fashioned ones.
Yeah, the rotary VPN.
Yeah, they're way more expensive than NordVPN.
You got to turn the little crank and dial in China to pretend to be from
that's
there.
That's right. You got to book a ticket. It's a whole big headache.
Yeah.
Big metal tube.
Yeah.
It barely works on any platforms. There's only one massive gray field that they let you as a platform.
I know.
We're talking about a plane. NordVPN can be used on all sorts of devices. It's really easy to use. And a VPN is an incredibly useful tool on mm-hmm. the internet. It lets you travel the globe without the added negatives of not being able to shit for a few days when you get there because the plane food
yes.
is made designed so that you're not meant so that you don't shit.
To so you back
don't
you use up.
The toilet. Right. Yeah. No lines for the toilet.
Because yeah. they don't want to put enough toilets on planes, man, so that they can have more seats on the planes and make more green.
That's so rude of them.
Yeah. I know. All What's toilets. That's the plane I want.
What's for dinner on this flight to Dubai tonight? Oh, a cork. Yummy. A big cork.
Every plane seat should also be a toilet.
Yeah, that would be cool. It. Yeah. Especially the middle ones where you don't want to get out and disturb people.
Yeah.
Travel the globe in a way less stinky way than that with NordVPN. Yeah, it's a great, reliable VPN service.
I'm going to use it to watch the football.
If you're going to do that, damn, go to nordvpn.com/filthy.
Oh, why should I do that?
Because you get free four free months.
Oh, yeah. Free four free months.
That's how free and four it is.
Wow. Free for free?
The deal's so nice, he
13,
said it
30,
twice.
32.
Yeah, nordvpn.com/filthy to get your deal for a good VPN, NordVPN.
And you're right, there's a lot of like tricks in there that are nice. Like there's a bit very early on where you sign up to this company called The Vanguard to do jobs for them. And there's a...
you got to guard a van is the thing.
Yeah, that's it. That's the whole game.
I don't want to steal it. That's really creative. Yeah, my bed's in there. That's my mattress.
Yeah.
I just got out of prison. All my
Why can't I steal it and drive it across this barren wasteland?
Mm-hmm.
But he tells you to go down to this floor and do your pilot training. And your pilot training is at the end of a sort of long hallway that's like a sort of museum exhibit of how the world got to this point. And right. I just kind of like walked all the way through just straight to the pilot training. I didn't engage with any of that
Unbelievable.
Stuff.
Unbelievable. That's your history that you're walking past, Tommy. People died fighting the Varun.
Well, when I'd done the training and when I went back to that guy, he was like, okay, let me just get your results up. Didn't look at any of the exhibits, hey? I was like, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's
he
nice.
He complimented someone, me. Said, wow, someone you looked at the whole museum.
Someone made a note and was like, I better tell the boss, this fucking prick didn't look at any of the exhibits.
I think he's walking on butter because he's going pretty damn fast through this stuff. And all that stuff is cool. Yeah. I like the world they've made, and like it really does feel like they've thought out, like it's funny to be like, there's a lot of places throughout this galaxy where you're seeing the same buildings over and over and whatever, but they've written like, yeah, but the colony wars were like 20 years ago and we spread and put up a lot of bases everywhere because of the colony wars. Yeah, well, that's cool, but explain why a ship lands on every planet I go to. Motherfucker, that's not the colony wars. But like all that background and lore and all the stuff to dig into is really cool. Even the, you know, like... I don't like the Varun. They're like, they worship a space serpent and they sound like they were named by like the Richard Nixon impression. But they, like, so much of what's going on has more to it and is more than it seems at first, too. And I really do think that, I'm so tired of, kind of saying this about a lot of games, I feel like recently too, of like, oh, after 5 or 6 hours though, you really start to sink into it, but like, this is that again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's an RPG with like a lot of customization and, you know, sub quests and a lot of writing. Like, it's that is the game. Like even Baldur's Gate 3, which was fantastic and like, you know, widely well received, like a lot of 90s and 100s and stuff and 10 out of 10s. Like that is a game that you had to settle into and they didn't make it bad. It's I think it's more, you know, the issue is if like the first 7 hours are bad as opposed to like, you know, an onboarding process.
Totally. I agree with that. I think in some ways the first few hours of this are kind of bad because you are wrestling with the stuff that you adjust to later and like the menus and things in particular. And it just like the feeling of like, oh boy, that's a lot more loading screens in between areas than I've seen in a hell of a long time. That sort of stuff. But then you find out you can take photos in the photo mode and it'll display your photos on the loading screens. You're like, that's cool. The photo I took of this character's butt is showing up on the loading screens. That's sick.
That's cool. That is a thing where it's why has that not been a thing before now? Like, yeah, that's such a neat idea.
Yeah.
And I think, like, there's I'm really keen to get into, like, the ship customization. Mm-hmm. You know, all the RPG stuff seems really, really cool and has a level of depth to it and detail and, you know, like, that's what Bethesda do well. Like, if you naturally vibe with what they do, including the flaws, you know, maybe they're not flaws to you, maybe you like the seams that you can see in the stitching that they've done, or if you like, you know, just overlook them, they do something that is very unique and they do it well.
They've got a style, yeah. They've definitely got their thing.
From there, like what there is, I think the only backward step that they have taken is that feeling of, I really loved like the feeling of wandering around a world. And that is removed to a pretty large extent. But other than that one aspect, this is the best game that they've made. For sure.
Yeah, right.
Like, the stuff that they do is all firing on all space cylinders.
Love those space cylinders. And I have to assume that like what would you call it, like adding that level of segmentedness is a result of the engine being old and the scope and the ambition of like, well, it's space and it's planets and it's, you know, it's not one landmass that you can walk from one side to the other two. Like, even though in some cases you should because you're on one planet, it's more a case of like, well, the entire game is too big. You can fly around, so they've had to like work that into their dated engine, I guess.
Totally. Yeah. Like, most of the time reasonable and clever workarounds to problems that they set up in the first place. You know what I mean?
Sure,
so it's like, they figured like, they've given you a big glass of milk with this dish that they've made too spicy, but it's like, man, you put the chili in here. What am I not meant to be still weirded out by that? But like, it's really fun. Like it's sucked me in. I'm enjoying the combat more than I have in any Bethesda game. Like the difference of going from like Baldur's Gate to this, there are a lot more people who like, they're a red mark on the map. You're not going to be able to walk up to them and go like, come on guys, we should figure this out. They're like flat out just an enemy there, but they're quite fun to shoot at. This, you know, has been their big, hey, we make games again, come hang out with Xbox because it's not the other one for this.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty good job they've done for that. Like for Game Pass type stuff, you could play this game for fucking ever too. It is so massive. And they've come up with some really clever things for the type of person who, you know, got really into building in Fallout 4 and all of that sort of stuff. There's a lot of those beyond just the quests things in this that will make this a very long-term game for plenty of people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. I don't think I don't think it's the you know, it's the turning point of RPGs very hyperbolic quote was mistakenly hinting at, but it's a good game, and it's especially a good Game Pass game. And I think probably like coming to it, Ben, knowing all this stuff about the loading screens and the exploration is probably going to be a benefit because you're sort of braced for it. It's not like a getting into it and being like, what's going on with this fucking menu?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the other side of it. And like, we don't have to talk about it too much, is that it kind of hasn't been that well received. Like, I know like not everyone puts stock in IGN anymore, but there's been a few reviews that are critical, like, you know, and a 7 out of 10 is still good, but in video games world, it's kind
for
of
something
like
that was you, being you pushed didn't. To this extent. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's on like a mid 80 or high 80 on Metacritic, which is still really, really good. But for some, this sure. is the problem is like, if you're going to be pushing it and Microsoft clearly wanting it to be there, the great white hope of Game Pass for this year. It's crazy to live in a world where I'm sure there would be someone on one of those teams thinking, oh, this is a bit of a disappointment, but it's
right.
It's not. It feels like players, generally speaking, are liking it.
Well, and it just, you know, there's heaps of valid criticisms for this. It just all depends. Like, numbers are stupid because it doesn't, like, to some people it's going to never be able to be this level of good because it has X number of technical faults, which mean who cares in to some extent, because I think this is a game that like is definitely worth trying for anyone who's enjoyed. Anyone who has enjoyed a Bethesda game in the past, you literally know whether you will or not with this one. And they're just doing their same thing again, which
you
know, good on them, I guess.
Microsoft knew that was going to be the case. Probably that it was unlikely that Bethesda were all of a sudden going to make a game that has even broader appeal. Like, you know, the Skyrim is like the most, you know, widely distributed game of all time. It seems like it, regardless of the fact that some people don't, you know, vibe with them at all, they're still massively, massively appealing. So
yeah,
they got to be happy with that. And I also have to assume that, as with most of their other games, there'll be patches, there'll be DLC, there'll be a modding community, there'll be a very long tail on this game.
There's already like a ton of mods out fixing a bunch of stuff, which is so wild to me how quick people are able to work with that stuff. Like,
yeah,
it's nuts. On PC at least. It runs fine on the Series X that I've been playing it on, I should say.
Oh yeah.
It's like locked to 30 or whatever, and it goes down a bit, and yeah, there have been a few times where it's just like completely blown apart or broken or whatever because of it seems to have trouble with saving sometimes. A lot of the time when it's gone to save, it'll like hitch things up massively or irretrievably or crash it, which is a bad moment to be struggling maybe. But I on PC it apparently is people are finding it to be a little bit poorly optimized and whatever, but like you say, all of that stuff with Bethesda games is like, for better or worse, people fix it for them a lot of the time. But yeah, like they haven't changed at all, and I think that maybe some people, probably us included, expected them to maybe have evolved a bit more than this, but they haven't, and they still make, you know, good shit in really crazy packages that are falling apart at the seams. But
yeah, I mean, so much of the like marketing is this is Bethesda's first new game universe in 25 years. And like the marketing of it really being like this is their first like new world that they've created, not like, oh, they've made, you know what I mean? It wasn't like, here they are with a big new game. It was specifically, hey, it really seemed
it's
like
a
it
new
was
property.
Pointing towards, here's all the Bethesda shit, but just in a completely new package for the first time in, a quarter of a century.
It's funny though, like, it's new and everything they're doing is cool with it. I forget that it's not Fallout sometimes. So much of what's going on here is like crazy similar to all their other stuff, but yeah, again, you know, I'm repeating myself now, Bethesda style, so.
Well, something else I've played, we'll check back in on this in 2 weeks. We have an ep for next week done already, with a special guest. That was a lot of fun. But yeah, by the time we're back in 2 weeks, Ben, you'll have been able to play it. And more people that listen to this will have. So we'll check in on some Patreon thoughts on it as well.
I'd love to talk about some of the stuff from like the back end of this game one day. Maybe, right. I guess end of the year probably will be the time.
Sure. Well, yeah. I can start playing it today if I want. Maybe I might, now that I've, you know, yeah, I wasn't able to play it for this, maybe I'll save it till I'm actually on my PC, not playing on my MacBook on xCloud. But yeah, I'm super excited to play it, and
I think you'll love it. Yeah. Like you know, this is built for exactly you, the people who are like, yeah, Bethesda games are great.
Yeah, totally. I'm super excited.
Since we last recorded, I've also played a game called The Good Time Garden, which is the people who are making that game called Thank Goodness You're Here that was revealed somewhere at GamesCon? I can't remember what presentation it was in the opening night.
Yeah.
Yes. They're a small team. It's a game that they made a few years ago. It's on Steam. It's free. And it's maybe 15 minutes long. It's almost like a just kind of sort of, demo-y.
Proof of concept-y
kind of thing. Right. But it's this, you play this little naked guy in a grotty little land and you walk around and weird, grubby little things happen. It's very like... British sense of humor of like little animals talking to you and stuff.
It's an adaptation of my last week. Little grot in British land.
Little naked grot. And Tommy, when you say it was 15 minutes long of you looking at this naked guy, was it 15 minutes long or you were just done after 15 minutes?
I busted. And now
What are you talking about?
I can't use my computer. Which is the sort of thing that happens in the game. It's great. It's got me really excited for this other thing that looks obviously way more fleshed out and way more dense. But I'd really recommend it. It's, like I said, Steam. It's free. It's a very brief little thing, but it's got great music, great acting. It's got like a weird, funny little script and tone to it. I'm surprised I never heard anything about it on the past, because now I think these guys are I think they're really good at what they do, and I'm really keen to see them taking on something a bit more robust.
You mentioned it to us like a week ago, and I remembered about it for less than the runtime of this game, I think, unfortunately. I like had meant to go, it sounded cool, but
it's not doing heaps, I guess, maybe just because it is such a short little experience. Like, it's very just brief, almost like an old flash game kind of thing.
But
if you're looking to just kill a very, very brief window of time, and it's very unique in its presentation and what it's doing.
It sounds like it's just going to get people excited for this more robust game that is coming out. Do we remember when by any chance?
I don't know if it has a date. I think it's next year probably. But if that game looked interesting to you, then check this out and it'll get you nice and revved up. And speaking of things that'll get you nice and revved up,
I was going to say there's probably I don't know which one you were going to say, but this one also will be rev worthy because I think they're doing another Nintendo Direct in September.
Yeah, that's the rumor.
Is the scuttlebutt, but they, for some reason, were like, we got a spare 15 minutes. Let's talk about Mario for a second.
And yeah.
Put up this.
Well, obviously, the next direct is going to be all about the Switch 2. So they want to pump this new Mario game.
People say they have it.
While there's still clear air.
I think the direct may have been because there was this Nintendo Live event over the weekend where a lot of journos got to go hands-on with the game, and they also trotted the director and the producer out for a bunch of interviews. So I guess it was tied to tied to like revealing a bunch of stuff about it, and then journalists have their hands on, but it's stuff that they've kind of revealed to the public as well. I guess it was all time around that. But nice little 15-minute look at this game. Not a ton of. I kind of thought there might be some sort of. They were maybe holding on to it. Remember, like, they showed Odyssey, and then it was like months down the track when they had that E3 presentation where they showed off all the cap stuff. I kind of thought there might be some weird extra little hook like that that they were hanging on to that they, you know, were going to, given that it was just a...
know about, I guess, was they showed a lot of the regular game, which looks like a Mario game, and it's got its like one or two kind of new mechanics in it and whatever, and then they spend
they're plumbers.
That's the mechanic of the pipe, and they spent maybe the second half of it talking about the multiplayer, which seemed kind of cool. Like there's the sort of new Super Mario Brothers style thing of four of you all running around at once, but then there's like this extra kind of like Demon Souls Death Stranding type of thing where you can leave messages behind for other players and like show them how to ghosts. Do a jump or whatever.
You
can choose to log on and see the like ghosts of kind of everyone, not everyone, but a huge chunk of people who are currently playing the level at the same time.
Damn.
Which looks like chaos. Just like 20 little spirits running around. You can leave power-ups and messages, and you get like little ratings on your profile based on how much the stuff that you've sort of left behind has helped other players out. It seems like it'd be a really cool, I think the way I'll engage with this is play through the game and then come back and do every level this way as like a second run through, just kind of focus on.
No, agree. Mario Wonder is just on my own. Mario Tudor, that's what I go through and I do with other people. Yeah. This is so specific, but I reckon you'll have been bothered by the same thing, Tommy. So I want to... There's a bunch of different playable characters, and they showed like, here's Toadette and whatever. I guess I don't remember if Toadette was there, but there's at least a couple of Toads.
Yeah, Toadette.
And there's a bunch of Yoshis
twins or something.
But the Yoshis are easy mode. If you play as a Yoshi, that means you can't die. And fuck you, I want to play as Yoshi, but give it to me straight.
Right. Yeah.
That is annoying. Yeah. It is weird that Yoshi's a Nabbit, the little rabbit guy that's in there.
Yeah.
That is a bit of a drag. It was like with that Funky Kong mode in the Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. He was like basically an easy mode, and it was like, I want the challenge. I just want to play as, Funky Kong.
Just because I'm
funky, mean, it should be harder. He's badass.
It's hard to funk properly.
There was a game where Luigi was easy mode as well, I feel like. Maybe.
I feel like the news. They often have some kind of it. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's cool to have an easy mode in there for kids and stuff, but I don't know why there's not just a thing that you just like, push on the controller, and that makes, I mean, a little kid would want to play as Peach, you know, like.
To paraphrase Ben's favorite actor of all time, Kevin Spacey, let me be Yoshi. Mm-hmm. That was an odd sentence.
I kind of skimmed through the multiplayer because, to be honest, I'm not going to engage with it. Even the ghost stuff. Like, I don't in the From Software games. I find them kind of, not a spoiler, but it ruins the immersion and it ruins the sense of discovery. So if I do go back through it, like you say, Tommy, it'll be a second time.
Yeah.
And maybe that is likely because it does seem like a really old school 2D platformer in that there's not a story that I can, like, it's very much like, this is the course, this is the score, this is the time, you know, it's about the platforming, not
I beg your pardon, but Bowser has turned the castle into a flower, or I think so. You put those words back in your traitorous mouth.
He's stolen flower power from this new little kingdom that they're in. But All the previews are talking about the little wonder effects that are in the levels are really cool. And they never do this with Nintendo games, really. But yeah, they trotted the producer and the director out for a bunch of press.
They were on horses.
And pardon?
Well, they trotted them out, you said. You're telling me they're on horses.
They were on Yoshi.
Little carriage. Every ghost
they rode in the out world. All the little Yoshis.
All at once.
And yeah, it's been cool just reading like some of their little things where the Wonder Flower idea kind of came from. them talking about how when you would play the first Mario back in the day and you'd go down a pipe and then you're underground and they, you know, those games used to have these kinds of surprises in them where you were right. like, oh, what the, that's so unexpected and weird. Now I'm up in the clouds. And they were right. kind of looking for a way to, as people have become more and more across the language of these games and there's so many.
The Easter egg hunting.
Just Mario's
yeah.
of like. Yeah, of how to like put stuff into a level where stuff is happening that's like, whoa, where'd that come from? Which is which is kind of cool. And they also had a tidbit where they were just in the concept art stage of coming up with the idea of Elephant Mario and Miyamoto came for a little stroll through the office.
Uh-oh.
And gets a look at the drawing and goes, what the hell is this? This isn't how elephants look. And was like really mad at it. And they're like, yeah, it's like a... We just started doing that drawing that yesterday. Like we're obviously got a long way to go. Please, please get off our asses.
Do you reckon he knows what an elephant dinosaurs. Looks like and they'd drawn it weird? Or Miyamoto had always thought that an elephant was like a giraffe?
I think
Could
his
be that.
I think his point was more that's not what Mario would look like if he turned into an elephant.
Oh.
Yeah.
I guess
I think that's the thing he took umbrage with.
Because Mario does always just wear the skin of an animal he turns into, I suppose. Like Cat Mario is just a suit. The Tanuki is just a suit. So him becoming an elephant is actually very un-Mario.
Good point.
You know what? Actually, I'm going to go beat up the developers as well.
It should be a suit because, as we all know, Mario is an actor. He's a famous actor and he's performing in a play.
Give him like just a strap-on nose with a you know,
little trunk.
Yeah,
yeah.
A strap-on
nose.
Yeah, that's all he needs.
But I'm excited for this game. I've enjoyed most of the new Super Mario's. You know, let alone the ones that everyone likes. So I'm excited for this. And yeah, having played World for the first time recently, I'm all in on
it. It's looking good. I'm pumped and a lot of those hands-on were like this feels like the direct sequel to Super Mario World. Like
those other
ones felt a bit more like they were, you know, kind of just running along a pretty similar track and then this is the first one basically since then that's like, hey, here's some weird new shit in here.
It'll be the first time in like in years, I guess in like 30 something years. That there's been a 2D Mario game where every like 11 seconds nobody goes like bah bah and does their little weird little turn to camera all the time. I hated that because it always felt like they like knew I was there and I always felt really self-conscious that they kept being like, yeah man, we're just playing around, like let me get immersed in the world of
but
Mario.
You can control them, Nox. That's the beauty of it.
No.
Yeah,
not the Goombas.
You can send them down the hole.
You know what's cool too, I hadn't really realized this until this presentation that he makes the little, like, there's the little sound effect of Mario jumping, which I don't think they've had in any of those new Super Mario Brothers games for a while.
Boing.
Yeah, I think it's been, for ages, it's been him going, wah! Like, it's been him making a little sound.
Damn, they're right.
Not the little sound effect.
Martinet with just a spring.
Oh, that was the other thing. I think people thought they would reveal that new voice in this, which they didn't, and they've just said... We're just not going to... It'll be in the credits when it comes out.
And he said... Yeah, I guess they haven't said the actor, but he's saying... I don't remember Mario saying this. I might be wrong, and maybe it's just my memory, which is very, very likely because I've forgotten what my point was going to be. In the thing, he's saying, wowie zowie!
Yeah, when he turns into an elephant, he goes, wowie zowie.
Is that your fucking thing? Because I've been watching, like, Family Ties or some 80s sitcom that had catchphrases.
I love it because he says that specifically for turning into an elephant. So it's like not only is it weird that he's saying it, but it's like is there some kind of link to this and the elephant species that we're not across?
Experiment.
I don't know.
Give Mario a bunch of new catchphrases, Little Britain style.
Yeah.
It's like in the village.
It's like him going, gadzooks. I don't like it. I think it's dumb.
Wowie zowie is bizarre.
Make him mute again. I've been hot on that for years. Make
You're
Mario
very
mute
confusing
again.
Red hats with MMMA. Yeah. People are like, oh.
It's like extreme UFC, MMMMA.
Is this like the Chaser parody version of MMA?
Yeah.
Too many letters? That is funny.
But pumped for that. Was there any other news around? Oh, Volition was closed? What was the Embracer group bought them and closed them?
I think they already owned them and they just went, yeah, fuck you, see ya. And like, shut them down because, Saints Row had not done well. And that's enough to get your head chopped off these days. Volition, have had a bit of a rough trot of the last decade or whatever. But I fucking loved Free Space 2 back in the day. That was an incredible game. Then they went and made Red Faction after that, which was a pretty big deal at the time. You could blow up the rocks.
I was a big Red Faction fan. I was, solely a PC gamer at that point in time. And that was like a sick, sick FPS that came out. Good story. That was a turning point in FPS's destructible environments.
Red Faction was cool. It came out on the PS2 before Halo had come out on the Xbox and was using the controls that Halo popularized that Alien Resurrection had used before Red Faction actually. I'm going to punch the biggest guy in prison. But that game was cool. Then they flipped back and forth between making Red Faction and Saints Row for 20 years and now they're gone. So good luck to everyone from there. A couple other kind of small things, I guess. Like more Switch stuff that we'll find out about soon, I do imagine. And a lot of people being like, we got the dev kits and it's real easy to port stuff to it. And it's about as powerful as a PS4, which sounds cool and not too unexpected. And the Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2. I think I've said all those words in the right order.
Yep.
I think you have, I don't know how, but
was meant to come out at the start of this year, I think, and I don't even remember who was making it then, but for some time, there was a rumor. I liked it. So it's been like sort of re-announced and it's coming out next year, and the developer is the Chinese Room, who are developers out of, I think, the UK. I might be wrong. It might be America. They're named after like a thought experiment I hadn't heard of before, where it's like if you have a room, whatever. But anyway, there's more to it. But they're the people who made like one of the Amnesia games. They made Dear Esther and Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. They're putting out Vampire 2. And there was like rumors going around about this because there was a documentary about them made a while ago, like 2 years ago or something. And on the background of that, on one person's computer, you can see in small writing the words Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2, something like that. So people figured it out because fucking every game person should be working for the CIA and is wasting their time. who can find you on Google Maps. But that got confirmed.
Yeah, that's confirmed. Just a CG trailer, which, isn't a great sign given it's a year away from now.
They rebooted it for sure. Like that game sounded like it was in a bit of a state.
And it's been confusing because there have been a million Vampire the Masquerade branded games come out in the past 5 years. There's been 2D platformers and Telltale style games.
I think a lot of them are visual novels or something, right?
Yeah, I think so. Or like mobile games. Like they've been putting out every kind of game except for a third person RPG. We've talked about this over the years, Nox, that the original Bloodlines was like a really fun and expansive RPG. And
it's great.
Hey. Would like another one, please.
Bad luck. Like, they might make something cool. They've made good games before, but same as with, like, Dying Light 2. Once you're in this position where you're taking over something that was sort of in trouble like this, it doesn't seem like that ever pans out as anything more than, like, oh, wow, they made something.
Right, yeah. We'll see. Mm. It could be a spectacular failure.
Could be a spectacular game. I hope for the best for them. Could be a spectacular failure. I secretly hope for the worst for everybody.
Whoa.
Don't tell anyone.
Sound like a vampire over there.
The bits and pieces of news, but Starfield's the big boy this week.
That's it.
Yeah.
And
we will talk about a game that also came out on Game Pass the next time we record, so in a couple of weeks, called Sea of Stars, which I recommend people try. It's a Chrono Trigger style RPG. It is better than any of the ones that I've played in the past, 5 to 10 years that are like throwback style JRPGs. This one has a lot of heart to it, a lot of personality. The combat's fun, so I recommend people give it a try before we give it a full on review. Personally.
Yeah, it's been doing really well. It's sold a lot of copies. It's reviewing.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
I mean, it came out the same week as definitely Starfield, same week, the early access thing, and it's been a bit more of the critical darling, I think, so far.
Be it people, an RPG that can come out in the middle of Baldur's Gate 3 and Starfield and still get noticed.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm not wearing a hat, but if I were, or I'm not because I took it off to you earlier in anticipation of saying this.
I'm only wearing a hat, as Joe Cocker famously advised. I was allowed to.
Stubborn Joe Cocker being like, I won't take my hat off. Just bratty Joe Cocker. No!
I'm not impressed.
We'll be talking about that in a couple of weeks, as well as, like we said, more Starfield. But let's leave it there for
still an episode this week though. We'll be back.
Yeah,
yeah.
Pre-recorded one with a very special guest.
It's a fun ep.
Injured himself on the podcast.
Yes. I went and watched that clip again, and it's pretty funny.
Sorry. Honestly, one of Australia's greatest physical comedians, so people should tune in for that. Watch the video on YouTube.
Milo Carrigan is really on next week.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Filthycasuals.com.au for the links to everything that we have going on. We've got the Patreon, where you can get a bonus episode of our show about movies and TV shows and other stuff in culture every week. Get on there, and we'll be asking for your thoughts on Starfield very soon. Get onto the YouTube channel and check out all the videos that we have, the Let's Plays and all the one-offs. And we've got our Bandcamp premium episodes as well that you can check out. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
shouldn't it be pronounced Starfelt? Not Field. That isn't the past tense of feel. Oh, no, I think you guys have cut out or something on the call because you're not responding. Starfelt. Field. F-E-E-L.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.